There we go. 97 minutes on the clock. It's finished here at Loftus Road. QPR 1, Watford 2. Big win on the road for the Hornets. Welcome to From the Rookery End.
Hello and welcome to From the Rookery End. My name is John and this is the From the Rookery End after Watford away at QPR. Yes, they were a quarter pound of rubbish. They lost 2-1 to the mighty Hornets on Sunday lunchtime. Still the weirdest time of the week to play a football match, apart from 8:30 on Sunday morning when I had to play Eli's, or I didn't play. I had to go and watch Eli, my son, play his Sunday league football. My name is John. With me is Jason.
Good evening-ish.
Ish. And Michael.
Super Ben Hamer in goal.
So you're saying that tune. Eli had a much better chant today. But this is what this is the chant he came up with during whilst we were watching the game today.
Can score this. Can score this. Can score this. Can score this.
So that's MC Hamer.
Really, yeah, very good. MC Hamer. Yeah, and he had a sort of cool vibe about him in the post-match chat.
Ben Hamer.
But again, great save from him in the last minute to keep Watford in it. But the man of the match, or as I know these days, the player of the match, Mr. Jake Livermore. Should we talk about his celebration first? it was a pretty cool celebration, wasn't it, Jace?
It was. It was the air of a man who says, "I can do that any day of the week, mate." it's not only
do it more often
second,
then, please, Jake.
Yeah, it's not only my second goal of the season, and the first one may have been from about 2 inches, but this one's from 20 yards. It was, yeah, very sort of cool, calm, collected. I guess it sort of personified him in the game. Really, he was quite a sort of cool, calm character. There were a lot of yellow cards going about, and he did get one of those yellow cards. I thought he was a bit unlucky. I'm not sure it was a deliberate foul. We just players coming together, but free kick, fair enough, but didn't seem like a yellow card. But generally, yeah, his sort of performance was a calm, composed one, just what you need when you're up against it away from home. Two lovely goals, and yeah, some very calm, stoic celebrations.
Do two goals. First goal, he out-Kone'd Kone. And the second goal, he out-Kiembe'd Kiembe. But Jack, Mike, what was it like? You were there at Loftus Road. What was it? How did it feel for you?
The first half was, if you imagine a 12 o'clock Sunday kickoff on a cold, grey, dreary afternoon, you can kind of get the vibe. And the game lived up to that very sort of limp billing, I thought, for the first half. Watford were, I don't know, they didn't really get into the game at all, and neither did QPR. I thought the ref was overly fussy, some peculiar decisions, and there was no rhythm to it all, and it was a bit of one of those games where it's two bald men fighting over a comb, it feels like, really. Two teams who wish they could just hit reset and start again. And as it was for the goals, it was always going to be just a little bit of quality that was the difference. And I think Jake Livermore's celebration was sort of like, right, come on, let's get on with it now. I've done this. I've scored the goals. Let's get on with sort of playing the game properly. But yeah, it was a wonderful moment. It just came out of nowhere, because the chances had really been at a premium for both sides. And yeah, there's just that wonderful, wonderful finish. And you know what it's like in away ends when goals like that go in, absolute pandemonium. And then shortly afterwards, when the QPR didn't learn their lesson at all and left him sort of unattended, a little bit closer this time, just on the edge of the box, and he arrowed that one in into the bottom left as we were looking at it, past the hapless Asmir Begovic, who, by the way, Asmir, you're definitely going bald. The best thing to do We've got a really good bird's eye view of your hair. You've definitely got a massive egg in the nest, mate. The best thing to do, take it from someone that knows, just shave your bonce, pal. Shave your bonce. It ain't coming
Absolutely.
Back. But yeah, bald.
I've got no idea what you guys are talking about. Have a good
It'll come, lad. And it just had an air of inevitability about it when that second one dropped to Livermore. The guy is no nonsense, and that's what his celebration demonstrated, and it was him personified. No, absolute no nonsense. That at the end of the game, the Watford fans were singing his name, quite rightly so. The Watford player, he was obviously off the field at the end, and Watford players were trying to push him forward to take the plaudits of the away end, which he did, but very reluctantly in the end. And there was a lovely little moment right at the end where Jake Livermore had his big old Kelme coat on, having been substituted. Matty Pollock had given his shirt into the crowd. And Jake Livermore marched straight over to Matty Pollock and put his coat round him just to make sure that he didn't catch his death of cold. And it's, you know, that's a very light-hearted sort of thing. But he looks after his teammates. He looks after this side.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing. That's sort of, you know, firstly, I watched it with Dylan, our mate Dylan, and he shouted, "Dad scored again!" And giving his coat away is exactly what a dad should do. But that role he played today, Jason, in what is a, you know, from what we've seen over a few months at least, he's the only one out of the magical three that we were sort of becoming the magical three with Kone and Kembe. Kembe away or back, but injured. Kone being sick this week. So he's the consistent, I suppose. And that's the role he sort of played, didn't he, in that midfield? But that just radiates out, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it sort of talking about that midfield and the role he's playing and how that midfield was shaped today, I guess perhaps there were clearer roles based on the players that are in there. So you had Livermore kind of the holder. We've got Deli Bashiru, who's the runner, and Chak Vatadze, who's the creator, you think, in terms of their abilities and their sort of skill sets. So perhaps even more important than the normal, where you've got Livermore performing that role, because maybe if a Kembe and a Kone both capable of tackling back and sort of getting stuck in, I'm not sure you get that as much from the two that were playing in midfield with Livermore today. So yeah, more important that he carried out that role, and as ever did a sort of decent enough job of it. They certainly weren't coming through the middle. If you look at where QPR were attacking, sort of focusing their attacks, it was avoiding Livermore, wasn't it? They were coming sort of down their left, out on our right hand side again. Sort of Andrew's looking to push forward. They're looking to try and find the gaps in behind. Nothing sort of getting past Livermore in the middle there. And then in terms of on the ball as well, just sort of progressing the ball. Again, as I think Mike said, we were sort of quite cautious in the way we play away from home again today. And we sort of ease our way forward, and he's quite solid in that regard, not giving the ball away. I think there are other players in the team sort of guilty of that, but there were the moments where QPR would try and press. He was able to sort of turn his way out of trouble, sort of a calm head on the ball, and that sort of senior figure in the midfield to hold things together.
He's just got an inherent understanding of what needs to happen in a football match. He knows what he needs to do, and he knows what his teammates need to do as well. And I think you just used that word radiate, John. I think that's exactly it. He exudes that sort of quiet, calm and strength. He talks to the ref, but he's never shouting at the ref. He lets him know that we're keeping an eye on him, all that sort of stuff, you know, that I'm keen on that sort of John Eustace role, but he does it in a very diplomatic and understanding way. He lets the opposition players know he's there, the occasional sort of little drop of the shoulder as they're walking past, but then there's a little smile and a pat on the bum or whatever. He is the consummate professional footballer. And I think we've been crying out, I think, for that level of just understanding of what it takes to win a football match. And just to see him do it in a yellow shirt is great. We're very, very lucky to have him. We're obviously having to manage him a little bit. He's later in his career than perhaps we would like. And I think there was a little bit of consternation about the substitutions today. I think they probably happened. It felt like they happened a little bit earlier, and we a little bit earlier than they potentially should. Perhaps Val panicked a little bit and and we ceded the sort of momentum to QPR a little bit. But I think that comes from having to manage people like Jake Livermore. Just my man of the match, even without the goals. And again, Jason said it there, and I think it's something worth talking about, is Watford's pragmatic approach is interesting, because they often do the hard work and then almost feel like they're unwilling to pull the trigger in making that final ball or that final burst forward. It's almost like they'd rather not make a mistake, so they turn back and go back again. Now, I'm all for that, because keeping possession means one thing. It means the opposition definitely can't score if you've got the ball. And there's it is frustrating. A lot of people saying, get it forward, get it forward. Then, of course, Hamer sends it long and the ball comes straight back again. But I do think Watford do a lot of their best work when they're on the front foot. Jake Livermore does help advance that. He does help deliver that platform to allow us to do that. And with Tom Dehly-Bashiru as well moving forward. But I just would like to see, I think the uber pragmatism is QPR were on their arse, quite frankly. They're not a good football team, with all due respect to, I was going to say, any QPR fans listening. If there's any QPR fans listening, what on earth are you doing? Do something better with your time, and also support a better team. But it's QPR are there for the taking. They're not good. Their striking options are pretty limited. You know, Lyndon Dykes scored against us. He's naffed, and they've got the youngster up front who look good. But that's an opportunity for us to be a little bit braver, I think. I think we do better work on the front foot.
What do you mean, though, Mike? What do you mean? How could this Watford team be braver? To take more shots in the bravest way? To go long?
It's a good question, because you don't want to just cede possession just by hoofing it up top. And it was an interesting decision by Val to play Reece Healy up front on his own today. And I think he showed glimpses of why he was chosen, that low centre of gravity. He has got relatively quick feet. He looks to spin the defenders. And I think the surface was tricky today. It was cutting up. It's not in great nick. I think one of the things you do see when you follow Watford away is that sometimes the Vicarage Road, we call it the carpet of Vicarage Road, it really is a cut above a lot of the surfaces that they're playing on away from home. But I think that didn't benefit Reece Healy. But I think just being a little, don't worry about, do have a shot. Do play a ball in. And it doesn't matter if it doesn't come off. It doesn't matter if it gets cleared or it gets put behind for a corner or the shot goes wide. How many times have we seen, how many goals have we scored outside the box this season? Quite a few compared to not very many previously. And that's because you win the lottery if you buy a ticket. You don't if you don't. And I'm not saying we need to go completely gung-ho. I just think we need to be more, I think we're trying to be over deliberate. I think we're always looking for one more ball, one more pass, that perfect sight of goal. And it's just not going to come. The Championship is such where it's Haysom, Jason, their bodies on the line, which is great. It's a very, very entertaining league. The matches this season have been great fun one way or the other. But just take a shot. Once you're in the zone, once you're in that final third, in the sort of red zone, to use NFL parlance, do something that asks a question. And don't worry if it necessarily doesn't come off. We take too long to come to the boil.
Do you think, Jason, that is on purpose? Do you think that's a part of the character that Valerian wants this club to have, particularly on away games, maybe? I remember the Sunderland game, even though it turned into what it turned into, we still, to begin with, weren't trying to go and to impose ourselves onto that game. And I've seen it plenty of times, even at home. Do you think that's part of the plan? Is it a good
potentially,
one?
Potentially. I don't know if it's telling as such, but just thinking about the lineup today, we had Martins and Asprilla both in again, which you think are a good outlets for us to get the ball out quickly. So if we're expecting the away side to be dominated in terms of possession, dominated in terms of areas of the pitch, with the ball being in our half more than in the opposition half, then I guess it figures to have those two on the pitch. As soon as you get the ball, try and get the ball to the wide players as quick as you can, because then you've got players that have got ability to take defenders on. We still saw the fullbacks pushing up, and we've talked about this before, about we've got Spreer and Martins playing on opposite sides, both perhaps wanting to cut in, and then fullbacks hopefully then cutting outside, but then fullbacks also are capable of cutting on the inside channel and playing that ball in behind and sort of getting in behind quickly. And you kind of think that would be the idea of how we're playing. Soak up the pressure, break quickly, hit teams on the counter. But it doesn't always feel like we then move the ball forward as quickly and get the ball to those guys as quickly today. Looking at Chakvetadze as well as a case in point today, there's a player who we know, we've seen sort of glimpses of what he can do in terms of running with the ball and taking players on. And it felt like he was the more advanced of the three midfielders in sort of in central midfield. Yet it just felt like we didn't get the ball to him quickly enough or often enough in the first half. And part of the problem it felt like, from me watching it, he always seemed to have players around him. He always seemed to be crowded out. And you'd think that if we were going to sort of seed possession and position to then get the ball out to him quickly, to have space to work in and run with the ball and then move the ball wide. And there were a couple of times in the first half we did. I think one I remember was when Ryan Andrews broke quite quickly down the right-hand side and perhaps didn't get the crossing quite quickly enough and he got blocked. But when we did it right, it worked well. We just didn't do it often enough and it was all just a bit too slow-paced to be effective.
I've got a question for you, Lance. I think there's definitely a caveat about today, in as much as we were missing Kone and Kayembe, that huge components in that successful midfield that we've developed over the past sort of month or 6 weeks or so. And that platform, those guys and Livermore, it does give you a very, very solid midfield that just wasn't there today. They're sort of a bit light on bodies in there. But you're right, Jace, getting it spun out wide, it's just the balls are there for to be seen, and you see the success. It's there for everyone to see. And that's kind of what I mean about the sort of uber pragmatism sometimes is, look, ultimately we've won the game. It's the fourth away win out of five. It's the record speaks for itself. But it feels like we're sort of kind of making hard work for ourselves. I just wanted to ask you both about, because you mentioned him, Jace, as a talented outlet. Mateus Martins is... I just don't know. What are we seeing from him? The other question is, I guess, John, Mateus Martins' thoughts, and Jace, you mentioned the wingers. Can they play on the opposite side, not cut in, and just hit that head down the flanks in a more orthodox way and get the balls in there instead of having to cut inside? But John, what are your thoughts on Martins? Is he getting you out of your seat?
No, the answer is simple as that, as it clearly is from the tonality of your question there, Michael. But no, it is that sort of thing, and you're right. And I suppose what I'm comparing it to is what he felt like very early on in the season. Mm. I think it was Coventry away where someone tweeted, whatever number he is, I never remember their numbers, but he was being called out as this threat that we had, and he hasn't. It's sort of disappeared. I don't think it's disappeared as the temperature's disappeared in the weather, but it feels, because his role hasn't necessarily changed that much. It's not like they've swapped him on wings or they've made him play at right back like they did Dele Bashiru, but he isn't expressing himself as much as it felt like he was early in the season. And that thing of, like you're sort of saying, you know, that bit of fun, well, you know, and having a go, he should be the poster boy for it. Mm. The Brazilian flying down the wing, showing off the skills, taking on the players, crossing the balls in. But he isn't. And if Ken was fit, you suspect he wouldn't be anywhere near the starting 11. But Jace, wrong sides? Him and swap him over?
Yeah, before I do that, I'm going to put the case for Martins in. Well, maybe not for Martins, but just a caveat in that it was his bit of skill that created or led to the second goal this afternoon, wasn't it? Because he actually, and it was, we talk about wanting to cut inside all the time, he actually did take his man on the outside, on the edge of the box, I think he was, put the cross in that then got blocked out to Livermore to then dispatch it into the bottom corner. We know he's got it in his locker. Mm. Perhaps it is a case of he needs to do it more. He needs to be encouraged to do it more. So he is capable of doing what we think he should be doing. So case for the players on the other side, absolutely. I mentioned just then about the fullbacks sort of cutting on the inside, the underlap, I guess you call it, perfectly capable of doing that. And we've seen many a time and I think Ishmael likes them to do this, is for the fullbacks to sort of invert, isn't it? So run inside. When they go into midfield, they come very central. So if you say they're in that sort of starting position when we're on the attack or when we're sort of transitioning, if they're starting to come into the midfield, then they've got that run there. They're in the right position to sort of continue that run down those channels. If your wingers are on the correct side, they've then got an outlet to play in behind, and it makes the sort of fullbacks and the defenders think a bit more. You don't know if your player's going to go down the left on the outside, or is he going to play a ball inside? Is he going to find one of the midfielders? If you've got a Chagvatadze or a Kone or a Kayembe, whoever, sort of waiting on the inside for a pass as well, it just, yeah, adds to the options. And as we saw, you attack your man down the outside, you get a decent ball in, anything can happen, like today.
Healy, again, not horrendous, but not imposing himself. Rajovic coming on as well for the last 20 minutes or so. Mm-hmm. Still the biggest... not nothing, but, you know, the biggest problem that we've got in terms of it, just not really, no one grabbing that centre forward position, or no one even showing that that's what we should be, or that's what we should be.
Yeah, I mean,
apart from Rajovic holding the ball up after 90 minutes. I mean, he held that ball up. I mean, they talk about a boy who's learned a little bit in the last couple of months. But 90 plus minutes, best moment of the entire game, him holding the ball up and getting a throw in because of it. It's the biggest way end shout of the entire day.
He did well. He did do well when he came on. I mean, look, we know full well it doesn't take us or a rocket scientist or brains of Britain to point out that Watford's striking options are massively limited. In some ways, it kind of is helpful because it's so obvious what we've got. One, we've got the big man, Rajovic. We've got Healy, who was playing today, the diminutive little... tricky little character, and then Bio, who's the sort of, I guess you would say, at a push, he's the all-rounder, a bit more mobile and physical, but also with the touch as well. None of them are anywhere near the finished article. We all know that. I'm enthused by Reece Healy's performance. I think it was more industrious than anything today. But he'll roll defenders. He will roll centre backs, and he'll win free kicks. What's his finishing like remains to be seen. The jury's out, but he definitely survives to fight another day. I think there's no we can't give up on him because we can't give up on him. We haven't got any other options. So definitely limited. But I think he can sleep easy after his performance at Loftus Road. And yeah, I think when Rajovic came on, there was a header just before QPR scored their goal, and that did feel a little bit frustrating. We had carved out a really, really good opportunity. Did what we've been talking about on this podcast so far, ball wide, into the box, on the big man's head, and he was just unable to steer it under the bar. It went over. It was a difficult one. And then QPR go up the other end of the score. But like you say, John, when he's come on in the past couple of games, what he's done is he's rolled his sleeves up and he has stuck his arse out and he has worked hard and he has done stuff that previously, earlier in the season, he looked unable to do. That sort of little bit of physicality and doing the donkey work, if you like, he's getting stuck in, and you have to give him credit for that. He's also in the top 10 of Championship scorers. I think that is a bit of a misleading stat, although again, you put in, if you're a striker, you're just on goals, and he's got a few. So I like the way he's getting stuck in, and he's sort of doing what is expected of a Watford player of the class of 23-24, which is, if you're on that pitch, whatever your limitations, you pull your weight and you put the effort in. And you're right, John, it was brilliant at the I was in the sort of area at the top where there's rail seating, and so there's a bit of extra space, and when he did that, everyone was sort of like running along and punching the air, go on son, well done lad, you won that free kick as the goal, the throw in as the minutes tick down. And that's valuable because it gets the crowd going again. It sort of saps a bit of energy out of the opposition, who were building up a little bit of a head of steam. So those little incidental moments are actually quite
massive.
Quite big, yeah, they are. As you look to see out a game away from home, and we've been critical of him looking a bit of a soft touch, certainly earlier in the season. And when he's come on, he's looked like he's rolling his sleeves up and getting on with it, which is good. But we've got a problem with strikers. We haven't got a what I would argue, a good enough striker to, we're up to eighth, aren't we? But if we're going to be serious about staying in and around that part of the league table, we need someone who can score goals on a more regular basis.
Here's a question for you.
Go on, then.
Would you take no new striker in January if we were going to be buying a better quality one and use that money in the summer?
I think they'll have to. They'll have to look at it in the summer. So, what are the options?
So, would you prefer it? Either we stay with what we've got, which is scoring goals. We are not. You know, it's not like we're not scoring goals. Not enough, as you say. It would probably mean we're not going to go into the playoffs, as you sort of said. But would you prefer to say, right, no, we're not going to spend any silly money now on a striker because we know in the summer we can spend a bit more plus what we would have spent this January and therefore get a better striker? Would you be prepared to wait is what I'm saying. Jace?
Yeah, I mean, football doesn't work like that, does it?
But, no, it doesn't, but it's a silly question.
I know, it's a silly question. I think so, because then you've got time to think about it. And we are, we where we are now, eighth and 1 point off the playoffs, is in reality probably better than we thought we would be this season.
Definitely.
The performances have been okay. We seem to have some sort of identity in the way we play. There is inconsistency there. We see it across different weeks. We see performances like the one at home to Bristol City where we're absolutely atrocious, and we see some great performances where we sort of steamrolled the teams, which we've done a few times. If we need to make changes in January, they're going to be subtle changes. I think Ishmael's talked about if we want to get someone in, someone needs to go out, and then there need to be the right people coming in and probably replacing the people going out, so that we've got the right depth in the squad. And then in the summer, yeah, then you look to strengthen. You say with maybe spend a bit more money. I'm not sure if we'll have money to spend. Who knows? What the summer would mean will be more movement and more players being available. And it might be that the right sort of striker then comes along. Hopefully, and again, thinking in terms of consistency, hopefully Ishmael is still the man there. So we're not, as a football club, having to rebuild from scratch again with different coaches and different tactics. And again, we can make more subtle, but bigger subtle changes, if that makes sense. Make those not changing things too much, but making big changes in the right places, i.e. a striker that suits the way we play, do that properly in the summer because the right player will be available.
I don't think when Ishmael talks about having a tight, small squad, I don't think that's paying lip service to the hierarchy, basically a sop saying, I don't mind that there's going to be no players coming. I think he means it. And I think that is borne out by what we see on the pitch. We've discussed lots of sort of points in the game at QPR where we've seen players supporting each other, rolling their sleeves up. The way they act is like a band of brothers. And so I think that Ishmael will be proud of what he's cultivated, proud of what he's done like Jay said, with no way we expect it to be at this point. We may not. The chances are we won't stay at this league position. Who knows? But they've done that because they've worked hard and they've stuck at it and they've done it together. And I think there will be a definite concern about upsetting that particular apple cart. I think what goes out will hopefully be replaced. They will obviously look, if they get an opportunity to strengthen, they will obviously do that. But I don't think Ishmael is just saying those words. I think he genuinely means it. And I'm all for it. So I would wait. We've talked about the limitations. What are we going to get in terms of a new number nine or a new striker in January? You've got to be very, very lucky to get someone that's going to come in and make a massive difference. So for once in my life, I'm prepared to be patient in that regard, John. Before we finish on the game, though, we talked about the attackers, we talked about the midfield. I think Ryan Andrews struggled a little bit early on, but grew into the game. Don't need me to say how lucky we are to have him. Kind of love watching him, even when he finds it difficult. James Morris, again, he's not the world's best left back, but he sticks to his job manfully, and he's filling in admirably, I think. I know a lot of people don't like him. If Watford are going to be upwardly mobile. He's probably not going to be your starting left back, but he got stuck in when it counted. The two centre backs did an all right job today. I think the conditions were tough. Sierra fell over pretty much straight away after the second half. QPR could have gone down the other end and scored. Another mention actually for Ryan Andrews. Late on in the first half, I think it was, Ben Hamer pushed the ball out from a fist cross, and his perfectly timed tackle undoubtedly saved a goal. Yeah. So despite him not having his best 45, when we really, really needed him to do his defensive duties, which is actually often what not catches the eye with him, he was absolutely superb. But another word for Ben Hamer, who has just completely grasped the metal when it comes in. Is it grasped the metal or nettle? What do you grasp? I mean, it doesn't matter.
Is the metal, not metal as in piece of metal, but it's metal, M-E-T-T-E-L, metal?
Yeah, well, it doesn't matter what he grasps because he's got those gloves on, isn't he?
But it's the ball. He grasps the ball, Mike.
Yeah, and he sort of, there was a lovely moment at the end there, sort of when Ben Hamer was just stood there, sort of everyone was singing the Hamer song, and he was drinking it in. He had this big grin on his face, and I was like, bloody right, mate. Stand there and enjoy it, because ultimately you've saved Watford 2 points. You've earned Watford the win with that late save. Those saves low down where you've got to get down quickly. And not only that, not only your reactions have got to be good, but your strength to stop a goal-bound shot like that, that low down with his right hand, it was, what, 80, 93, 4, 5 minutes on the clock. Saved, he earned Watford the win, and no one expected Ben Hamer when we signed him. He was third choice, effectively, wasn't he? No one expected him to have this sort of run of games, and he's grown into it an absolute treat. And I thought he performed really, really well again at Loftus Road, and it was great to see him drinking in the adulation at the end, because he deserved it. We could well have walked away from that game 2-2 if it wasn't for him. So yeah, massive. While Livermore will get the plaudits for the goals, Hamer did his bit again, and I thought that challenge from Andrews to stop a goal late on in the first half was tremendous. So really, lots and lots and lots to be pleased about. I think there are tweaks and changes, and I think this Watford side can afford to be a little bit more bold, and gung-ho is the wrong word, but a little bit more express themselves. I think what you said earlier, John, I think that's right. Take a little bit more of a gamble when they've done the hard work in that final third. But overall, it's another digging in performance, another performance where they've rolled their sleeves up, but gone toe to toe with a gritty opposition and come away with the win. And it's just great to see. Thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyable afternoon in the cold at Loftus Road.
Grasp the nettle. N.
Oh, isn't it? It is N.
Well, this is from the Cambridge Dictionary. I don't know if you prefer Oxford or Cambridge Dictionary. You might be different there. To force yourself to be brave and do something that is difficult or unpleasant.
Well done, man.
Yeah, grabbing some stinging nettles would be a stupid thing to do and unpleasant. So, yeah, maybe that's it. This one says nettle. I might be wrong.
We're the Orns. You're the Orns. Come on, you Orns!
This week, the club hosted a series, two a series, I'm not sure, a pair at least, of At Your Place events. This is where, it's sort of like a fans forum, Q&A sessions where fans get to come along. Invitations were sent out after people applied via the website. One was on Tuesday at Wildstone Football Club, where we had attendees from the commercial side of the club. And then on Thursday at the Sun Sports Social Club in Caspery Estate, where we had discussions about the match day experience. And lots of people who were part of the facilities and the security were there to take questions. I had a chat after both those events. I was at both, along with Tom Wicks, who is the editor of Golden Pages, the Watford fanzine. And we had a chat how we felt after those events. Tom, we've just left the second At Your Place event of the week. Tuesday evening, we weren't at the gym. No, we went to At Your Place. We got to talk to and hear from many people who were the commercial side of the club, be it retail, operations, sales, as well as catering. And then on Thursday night, no, we didn't go to the pub. No, we came to another At Your Place, where this one was more about the match day experience. Two very different events, but your How are you feeling, I suppose, generally, like the overall feeling leaving those two events?
Yeah, I think it was really good, really informative, and it helped people to understand why the club makes certain decisions, why they do certain things, even if it, you know, people don't necessarily understand them. Tuesday was very different to tonight. There was a bit of atmosphere in the air. I don't know whether it was, you know, the bar was open a bit earlier, but I think people had a bit more frustration about the match day experience, and I think it would have been good for the club to hear that as well directly, because they wouldn't necessarily hear unless it's a complaint. So I think it was probably useful for both supporters and the club nights like this, and it's always good to get together and just learn a bit more about the club. Well, speaking from a personal perspective anyway.
Yeah, I think I felt, yeah, definitely Tuesday was not nicer, I'm not going to say that, but it wasn't anywhere near as contentious. There were some real sort of contentious things, and very early on this evening you could feel the frustration in that audience, people coming clearly with things they wanted to voice, not just ask questions about, but they needed to voice them. And I think, as you sort of said, that's a good thing for them to hear us. It was never, in my mind, I doubt in the club's mind, it was going to solve every problem that came up, but hearing from a few, giving more information out there, it's always a good thing. Let's talk about some of the things that were talked about. Tuesday, commercial, kicked off with the controversial, for lots of Watford fans, because we are the original family club, the Mr. Q sponsorship and why we have it on front. What were your takings away from that chat?
Yeah, that's something I follow quite a lot in Golden Pages, how I feel about that not being applicable with being the original family club. And I don't agree with it, but again, there was more information from the club and just helping us to understand why that is and the commercial pressure in that instance. And that was the first question, and the club were very well prepared for that because they had someone from Mr. Q answering that question, and I think he disappeared halfway through. So yeah, job done in terms of that, and they predicted that. Yeah, the Tuesday night one was a bit more relaxed. I mean, there was free pizza. Are we allowed to say that?
Yeah, free pizza. The club gave. But I think we went to not have as much pizza as we had because the numbers weren't quite there. But it was really fascinating, sort of, to firstly hear from Mr. Q in terms of what the difference is, I suppose, for the club. How different it was. I think he said in from sales point of view, it could be the difference between, you know, £3 million. And if they have had equal amount of money to come into the club on deals, it was a vapour. And it's like, these things aren't going to go away. Nice people don't give big sponsorship, was my thought going away from that. But there was a lot about the trust and actually sort of the work that could also be done, knowing, and Mr. Q sort of, he sort of talked about it in a sense of, they see gambling, because they're not betting, they're gambling, like a casino, more like a recreation. And I think, I don't think you do sort of see it that way, but trying to do some work with the club or the trust, and there are some hurdles with that, it seems.
I don't think it changed my mind necessarily on the position, but yeah, again, it's a bit of context, and I think they were trying to sell Mr. Q as the local good bookmaker rather than the big bad Ladbrokes or you know, William Hill or any other name another. But yeah, I think that there were other parts from that night. It was good to hear about the Kelmy deal being extended and the club's perspective on that, and a few sort of little tidbits like the half season season tickets. I asked the question about there being a potential season ticket price rise next year, and what I took from that was there might not be, or they were trying not to do that. It's good to hear and get that sort of information and what the club are thinking when they're making these decisions. So I found that really useful, the Tuesday one in particular.
And I like the fact, you know, that Kelmy thing, that made me think. I think I put it in one of our Instagram posts. I sort of said, it does seem to be that the deals the club have at the moment are working better for them in terms of how they work with their partners. The Kelmy one really highlighted it in terms of the difference between Kelmy and Adidas from the club's point of view. I think he said they didn't feel loved by Adidas. but they're getting a lot of love and a lot more adaptability, I suppose, and help to do things such as like the women's kit. The fact that they could order small numbers that they know that they're going to fill rather than having lots and lots of waste. So I think that was great to hear that they've now got better partners, that they can work on these things a lot nicer. A little bit about new stands, a new stadium did come up, but that was just more like just answering a little question. But I tell you what, tonight in the match day experience, several of the things that came up, I sat there after Tuesday going, do you know what? I think a new stadium would actually solve all these problems. Not that I want one, but it would solve a lot of these problems. But tonight, again, we said the slightly more contentious side of things, but the hot topic was about stewards. Can you sort of talk us through about the different problems people have had with stewards? Because, you know, I'll be absolutely honest, I don't have any problem with stewards. If they've sent out communication telling me something that I'm not allowed to do, I'm sure they have. I don't read the emails. And that's on me. That is all me. So I can't sit there and complain. And I haven't tried to take a flask in. And I haven't tried to take an umbrella in. So what other things would people sort of just seem to have some grievances with?
It seemed to be a lot of personal experiences people had. The inconsistency with the stewarding, you know, sometimes being heavy-handed, you know, not appropriate, and the way that things are handled by stewards. And there were a lot of examples about people sort of from game to game. And that was something that... It's difficult to answer because it's almost like, you, from the club's perspective, you almost need a complaint to come in to investigate that single issue. So they're looking at like overarching issues, shall we say, and it seems from the club's perspective like quite a difficult environment at the moment for stewards. The numbers are going down. It's harder to get them in and perhaps the quality they like. But I think there's sort of an element of what I picked up was the lack of customer service, perhaps, and... Football's changed. There's more security checks in place. That's not on the club. It's on, you know, the greater rules and regulations. And I think tonight helps people to understand that. It would be great if we could just waltz in and enjoy our game, sing and stand and shout whatever you like as your match day experience. But I think the realities of football now, without going off onto a massive tangent, the environment we're in at the moment, we need security checks for our safety. And it was more about the club explaining the purpose of that. And it's frustrating because football isn't like it was a few years ago in terms of that. But hopefully it helped a few people like myself understand why they do certain things. And I think there were some learnings in there as well for them.
Did you feel that as the evening went on that... I'll say the hostility, let's say, that came into that room to begin with. Anger ramped up all of a sudden, but did you feel it dissipated as we grew to knew a bit more about situations?
I think so, yeah. And once the explanations were coming in, and I think the people that were speaking shared a lot of the frustrations. And again, it's not necessarily Watford's implementing further checks or anything. These are just things that they have to do as the rules and regulations. And yeah, things like the plastic water bottles was a particular something that got people's goat. And just a sort of an explanation of that always helps. And you don't need agreement, you just need to know, for people to understand the reasons why something, you know, a rule's in place.
Yeah, and I suppose it was quite nice to sort of hear, you know, someone complained about away fans in the home end, and it always feels like from that point of view when you're in the stand and you're seeing them that person has been sold a ticket. But when their club have the ability to talk to us, it certainly feels different in terms of some of those away fans. And even recently, there's some fans at Southampton game, you know, they're away fans in the upper GT because of hospitality, or the number of ways an away fan could possibly get a ticket that isn't the club making mistakes, I suppose.
Yeah, the people that were speaking tonight raised a few things that perhaps we'd not necessarily think about, like Watford fans giving their ticket to their friend who might like Arsenal, going to an Arsenal game and think, oh, because they were my friends, they'll be well behaved. And yeah, you know, sometimes it doesn't happen like that. We've all got mates that support other teams that are fine in our presence, and then might not be so much when a, you know, last minute winner goes in, for example. It's not been an easy time to support Watford the last couple of years. You add COVID onto that, and the personal experiences away from football, and then you've also got the frustration of being pent up and people having to watch at home, not being a part of the club. And I think there's still a bit lingering from that as well.
Yeah, I don't think we've necessarily had the chance to get over that. Like we missed that promotion, and we never got a chance to celebrate that together. But also felt quite interesting to hear a lot about the little things that are changing. And again, I put that down to, you know, if I turned up with an umbrella, if I turned up with a thermos flask, if I turned up with a flag, you know, those things have clearly had flashpoints in the stadium for individuals. The knowledge, I'm sure, is out there and has been put out there. you're sort of a fellow who would look those things up. I'm not. But it did you feel the crowd accepted it at least a bit?
I think so. It seemed that way as the night went on. As you said, it seems to get a little less. The atmosphere dampened a little bit.
There's one fellow who sit right near us, and he sort of said at the halftime break, they're swerving things. And I worried, like, very early on, all the different legislation they talk about. Yeah, he had all the books out in front of him. I saw you get quite excited about all those those technical books there, Tom. And he sort of put that, and I was worried that he was going to hide behind them and they were going to be a barrier for any sort of conversations. My point of view was I didn't think they were dodging things. Did you feel that?
I didn't, know. I mean, I've got a bit of empathy with the people that were on the panel, because no one wants to listen to the legalese and the terms and conditions and why you can't do something. But, you know, certainly in the context of football as well, it's not easy to hear, but sometimes you just have to, you do have to hear it, and helps to process the reasons why you have your bag checked or you're not allowed sharp objects, something like that. Most of it seemed to be, if not all of it, seemed to be covered. There was the bit about the hot and cold foods. I thought that was quite interesting to hear the club's approach to that as well, from a sort of non-safety aspect, and, you know, about their contract or the impact that has.
You can actually see quite an element of frustration from the club, almost like they're stuck in a hard, you know, a rock in a hard place with the contracts that they have that are always being renewed at different times. But that, I think, particularly was quite nice to sort of see them as people sort of talk about that, rather than it be, again, those flashpoints you have as you're walking into the game with a bag of chips or whatever it is. That's where it was, yeah, that's the difference.
Well, it's also hard, really hard to sort of disseminate information about the rules. And, you know, we all remember coming back after COVID and suddenly you had electronic tickets and nothing seemed to work and you weren't allowed this, that and the other. And no one, as they said it themselves, no one really reads the emails or reads the social media things about the rules and regulations. So there's always a bit of a lag between this being input and the fallout from it. It was interesting to hear that from their perspective. And there's quite a lot of Watford fans on the board. I spoke to Paul, I think his name is, the end, and he certainly felt a lot of the frustrations that we do as fans. And obviously we're on the outside looking in, and, you know, he's in the heart of it. And I think nights like tonight and Tuesday helped certainly myself to understand a bit more about why they do things. And they're not doing it to be awkward. No. It's just not the hand they're dealt, but, you know, the framework in which they've got to operate. And, you know, there's things that they could definitely do better, but also there's quite a lot of restrictions as to what stops them from you know, returning to the days of old, where you could bring a cup of soup in at 90 degrees and drink that in the middle of January.
I thought you'd be more of a Bovril man, Tom. I don't know why. Yeah. But anyway, a lot of the anger does come, you know, the personal stories came from when I was dealing with the steward here, this happened to me, this happened to me, this happened to my granddad, this. And it is, for lots of people in that room tonight, it is a real thing that's on their mind and has really changed their Watford experience. And I personally I took it as, you know, I don't speak to every single Watford fan. I have my friends, I have the people I sit around, and there's a variety of them. But hearing other people's perspectives in this night, for me, was really interesting to see what their experience is like. Do you really think a night like this can do a lot for certain members of the club to know to make change? Or
I think so. It's a two-way street, these sort of events. As long as the club are listening to people and not just towing the party line and explaining why they do things, not listening, it's a two-way street to get anything from these things. I mean, it was also interesting to hear from Luther about his role, which was a little bit unclear, should we say, before tonight.
Luther definitely came, he started the second half, like, literally wanted to sort of explain things. You can clearly hear he's been talking probably through mostly social media and match days. He wanted to speak and sort of define himself, his role and what he wants to do a lot more, didn't he?
Yeah, that was really useful, I felt. And he sees his role as a kind of mediator between the club and, not complaints, but certain issues that supporters have. And obviously he's a really important figure in the club's history. And to be a person that supporters can go to in the knowledge that he will try and help them is good to hear, and it's useful really for just the general fan really. And that was important I felt to clarify, because it's sometimes you I don't know, kind of left wanting a little bit as to who to go to, perhaps, if not if you want to make a complaint, but if there's something that needs a bit of clarification or something. And sometimes it can be a bit intimidating calling the club, or you know, asking to speak to specific people when you just need a bit of a softer hand, perhaps.
And well, it's having, you know, you speaking to the club through supporters at or phoning a switchboard feels amazingly different compared to going in there with a speaking to a person, a face. So hopefully he can do that role. It takes a while for everyone to sort of understand that that's the place to go, but he's doing quite well at it, but from what happened. But it's just another event, I suppose, another opportunity, and there's more to come this season, we're told, where, first time in a long time, where dialogue is happening between fans and the club, and that can only be a good thing.
I'm a little bit sceptical in terms of the reasons for doing it. I think the more they occur, and if there are more, as they said they would do later on in the season, then that's great from a supporter's perspective. I know they've got obligations to engage with fans under, you know, the EFL rules and stuff. And I'm sorry for explaining the legal stuff. It's just my part of my job as well to do that. But yeah, the more these sort of things happen, the better.
Yeah.
I think that's clear for everyone. And hopefully we get to a bit more of the football stuff later on as well.
Yeah.
Be good to hear from Val again, and if we get to hear from Gino again, imagine that.
Imagine that. Yeah, I mean, we learned in the summer when we, you know, you were part of it as well, Tom, but you know, putting that Gino event together, you know, it's not the answer, and the answers, not all the answers are there, especially in that forum and that scenario, but you hope that it will something, and it will happen from there, and more come from it. And I don't want to say the word drip feed, but you definitely want to feel that if this dialogue continues, then it can only be a good thing. Even if it is ticking a box for a thing they have to do, there was still a lot of talk. There was still a lot of things said there, and hopefully it will do something good.
You know, and the real changes that will come from this, we'll hopefully see over the next sort of few weeks, few months, maybe even few years, the things that will change and will come as a result of the club listening to supporters like this on an ongoing basis. So hopefully it all helps to get us back to supporting the club that we love on the pitch, and feeling comfortable in the reasons why the club are doing certain things, and equally allow us to challenge them when it's not something that we consider acceptable as well.
When's the next Golden Page out?
It's out next home game. Is it Cardiff?
Yeah.
Cardiff at home, Saturday, 3 o'clock. Been working really hard on that, got some great stuff coming in, so I'll be busy spending late nights and early mornings if my wife will let me putting that together. But yeah, there'll be a run of games, and then I've got one more before the season's out as well. But if anyone wants to help, has got anything to contribute to it, being a written story, photos, absolutely please get in contact with me, and I'll do my best to represent it in beautiful print. So there's nothing like it.
How can they do that? Best way to get in contact?
Social media, email watfordfanzine@gmail.com, or come and see me. I'm the fella in the massive yellow coat, looking as though he's freezing on the corner of what is now Yellow Brick Road.
Yeah. So grab yourself a copy of that one at the next home game. Thank you very much, Tom.
Thank you very much, John.
A podcast made by Watford fans for Watford fans from the Rookery End.
It's really interesting to hear that, John. I'm glad you were in the room on Tuesday and Thursday to hear that. And good, actually, before we carry on, good that the club are doing it.
Yeah.
Good that they're sort of putting them in silos so people know what to expect, and so you're not getting questions from all over the place. So fair play to the club, and well done for going along, John. But what are your... Jason and I weren't able to be there. How are you feeling after the dust has settled on those two events?
I think I it's interesting, like I say, it was such a different event on Thursday, and I'm always trying to solve a problem. It's my engineer in me. You see what the problem is, you think about it, you go, oh, that what it could be. And then, and throughout the whole event, there's, you know, people making suggestions. And I think it just sort of boiled down to me. There's two things. The biggest anger went towards the stewards. You know, that as was much, it was very clear. And I think if, yeah, the solution really is, can you do what you do, but with a smile? You know, service with a smile would go a long, long way for people to just feel welcomed. And I think that's for people in the room whose anger got, you know, grew as even went on, where I didn't have any anger and I just felt, oh, right, we're being educated. That anger grew because the people talking weren't doing it with a smile. And I don't expect them to do it with a smile. Everyone is their own way. Some people are very straight down the line, give you the answer. Some people go, hey, you know, they're bubbly, whatever. And those personalities were never going to, you know, help you come across. And nobody was going to say, yes, it's our fault. And I don't sort of blame them for, yes, it's our fault. So I think if the stewards and everyone who's part of that does a service with a smile, great. And as I sort of said, I've never had a problem with a steward. Maybe I'm lucky. And I know the one who I walk past as I go into the vomitories, as they call them, the entrances up the stairs before you get to your seat.
Just that, it's got to be up there for one of the worst words.
Absolutely. I mean, what are we, the puke coming out of him? Anyway, and I smile at him now because he's there every game and you see him and he knows who we are. That isn't happening all over the place. And the problems in the family stand, as we were told on the night, really come down to there are some slightly younger Watford fans causing a lot of antisocial behaviour. And they are having to sort that out in one way or another. And that is what's causing some problems, I think, in the family stand. But it doesn't stop that the feeling that the other fans, the majority, feel about how they're being treated. And I think how they're treated is two factors. That first factor of being serviced with a smile, but the other factor is I'm now having to do things that I didn't have to do before. And that all comes down through legislation. And some people felt that they were hiding behind the legislation. I didn't. I don't think they necessarily explained it fully, but that was an impossible job. You were never going to do it. I think think about it afterwards. As a teacher at a very well-to-do school in a very nice area, child safety safeguarding is number one on our agenda. And we always have an attitude at our school, no matter how good and how wonderful and how, you know, good jobs all the parents have, we still have the attitude, it could happen here.
Yeah.
So if it could happen here, then I will always act in a way that I will do my best so it does not happen here. And a lot of the things that the club are doing that they didn't do in the past, where some people might feel that they're being made to feel like they're guilty, that I absolutely understand. But personally, I go, I'm fine with that. I'm absolutely fine with that. And not everybody is. So I absolutely agree with that it could happen here and we're going to think that way. I completely agree with that. But a little bit more communication that I haven't looked out for, it might be there in terms of flasks and umbrellas and all these things, a bit more education. Because I used to take in our recording equipment. They look at my bag and they say, what's this? I say, oh, we do a podcast afterwards and we do this. And they're fine. And I do remember almost 2 years ago, someone saying to me, well, you won't be able to bring that in a few seasons because the laws are all going to change. Mm. Now, I haven't a problem with that because I don't bring it into we don't do it after the game anymore and I don't have to bring it in. So that might have been a problem for me this season if that was the case. But I haven't had these problems. But I absolutely know if people have been going week in, week out for decades, how all of a sudden to be felt like they're a victim, they're guilty, how that would make them feel. And I get that.
It's a really, really important conversation to have. And I have to say, before I weigh in, cards on the table, I work, so I'm over on the Sir Elton John side in the press box for the majority of games. So I don't see any of this, so I've got no experience of it. So it's been quite an eye-opening week for me to hear from some people who have got absolutely no issues with their match day experience, and some people who have got really quite upsetting issues with their match day experience. And ultimately, you're going to Watford Football Club, any football club, any sporting event, but you're going to Watford because you want to enjoy yourself and you don't want it to be stressful. You don't want it to be upsetting. You don't want it to be concerning or problematic. And if it is being any of those things for people, then that needs to be addressed and tackled and talked through and work out how people who are finding going to the game unpleasant, how that can be fixed, because they have a right to go to the game and enjoy the game as much as the people who go in and haven't got any issue. So I think the issue is that steps are being taken to mitigate against either isolated incidents. So I think it was explained that what was happening, that was a certain number of people were getting into the stadium in perhaps the rookery, making their way down the lower GT into the, or the upper GT or whatever, into the Vicarage Road end to have a pop at the away fans. Now, some people might argue that's all part of the game. That's what it is, getting the atmosphere going, have a go at the away fans, representing what that might be the game for you. But that might in turn be upsetting people in the family stand. I presume it was, if they've brought in these measures to check tickets, which has caused queues, really, really big queues, where they're checking people's tickets to make sure they're in the right area of the ground. So if you don't know that that's why that's happening, ultimately, really, to protect the family stand, where you could have young kids, families there for their first game, from people who are not suggesting they're violent or anything like that, but are ultimately in the wrong seat, so could be just causing a bit of a nuisance. But if you don't know why that's happening, you'd be like, well, why is my ticket being checked, having been scanned in? I've obviously got a ticket. Why am I being now forced to queue? We know that there is a bottleneck before in the lead up to kick off. Most people turn up at what, 2:45, I guess. So if you're scanning your ticket, then having your seat checked again, that's going to cause problems. And if you've got kids or you're desperate to get to your seat or whatever, communication is key. Understanding why they're doing that is important. And obviously that wasn't relayed. It's a difficult one to do. And then similarly, from a more long-term point of view, legislation is in place and regulations are in place. And I think, as far as I know, they aren't decided upon by Watford. They're sort of given to you. I think there was talk of the regulations were there on Thursday night in the form of the various handbooks. And they can't bend the rules. They can't change the rules. But what they can do, John, as you say, is stick to those rules, but do it in a way that is in keeping, yes, with the way Watford do things, but do it in a way in which we don't like being called customers, we're supporters, but do it with a smile and work out how you can do that and work out how you aren't going to be upsetting people. And I think a lot of it would be communication. So as far as I can tell, the flask thing, for example, if it's freezing cold, it's quite nice to have a cup of hot chocolate or a cup of tea. And if you've been doing that for 3 decades, 4 decades, 5 decades, and then all of a sudden the next minute you can't, there might be a good reason for it, but that was never communicated. Similarly, for example, umbrellas. Now, I assume big golf umbrellas, the reason that they're not allowed is that if everyone in a row has got a massive golf umbrella, it's underneath your seat, and then for whatever reason you have to evacuate. That could potentially make it difficult. So that's probably why. Luckily, it feels like a far-fetched situation, but it could happen. And I think, ultimately, on any given match day, a pretty high percentage of my immediate family and friends are going to be in Vicarage Road Stadium. And if things can be taken, if steps can be taken to make sure they're safe, I'd rather it was done than not. And I'd rather we talk about it now than we're looking at it afterwards. No matter how unlikely it might feel, or no matter how far-fetched it might feel, or how petty it might feel, I'd rather the conversation was had now than after something where people that we love are hurt, injured, or God forbid, even worse. So it's a serious, serious issue, but it's also a serious issue that the match-going experience is protected. And the match-going experience for Watford supporters is a good one. I think if there's new regulations and new rules and new parameters and new challenges, there are always going to be issues around that. But the club, I think, have a duty of care to work out how to iron those out. And that's why I'm glad that they had this at your place. So to give a platform for people who are obviously having a difficult time of it. And, you know, we've heard people say, look, it's becoming a hassle to go, so I'm not going to go. And that isn't what it should be. There should be a way of enforcing is is the wrong word, but it probably feels like that's what's happening. There should be a way of implementing the regulations, delivering on safety requirements without making life a misery for people, which it sounds like it is. I don't experience that. The people I've spoken to in the main don't, but that doesn't mean there's clearly a lot of people who are having that experience, and that's not fair on them. So I think it's a grown-up and important conversation to have, because everyone needs to be safe. The regulations need to be followed, but also the experience needs to be one that delivers what we as supporters need it to be. It's a leisure pursuit, it's a hobby, it's something that means a lot to a lot of people, but they're entitled to enjoy it. So I hope that coming out of this week there can be sensible dialogue about how those important regulations and legislations and steps to keep us all safe are implemented in a way that doesn't impact so drastically on what feels like a reasonable number of supporters. So hopefully we'll see this conversation through. And I think that's where, Do Not Scratch Your Eyes guys did a great job of doing an audio feedback on both events. You were there, John. And that's where we as supporters, we've always called ourselves Critical Friends. We do stuff slightly different to the way that Peter and Justin and Carl do Not Scratch Your Eyes and the Watford Buzz and all the other guys. We do all do things slightly different, but we're all got the same aim, which is we want Watford to be the best club it can possibly be. And I think we can all play a part in driving that conversation forward and doing it in a measured and an appropriate way, and hopefully making sure that those people who are finding it tough to go to Vicarage Road can be found a solution in the very near future.
Yeah, and actually, it's a one event, and it's a step, hopefully, into sorting all those problems out. So it's not finished with, and we'll see how it develops over the next few months. Thank you very much, Jason, for your time and your thoughts.
Thank you very much.
And thank you, Michael.
Thank you, and thank you, Watford. What a four wins out of five away from home. Is that right?
Yeah.
Absolute giddy.
I reckon we've gone decades. We've done, I think, in the 90s, I don't think we won four away games in the entire decade, did we? Let alone four out of five. Absolutely amazing. Great to see that away end bouncing at Loftus Road. Just another memorable Watford away day. Let's get behind the boys. Those of you who are going to Bristol City, enjoy it. Make some noise. And yeah, I think this is a side that we can get behind. It's good fun.
Come on, you owns!